Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Those of us who tend to be spiritually minded, and I suspect that includes everyone who is listening, at least voluntarily listening to this program now, seem to find spirituality and religious overtones in virtually every place. We may be watching a movie or a TV show or a play, reading a novel, then sort of nod or smile to ourselves as we realize that what we're reading or watching is surprisingly familiar. It bears resemblance to a biblical story or a character, or seems to follow along the lines of an ancient myth that we know others won't easily pick up on. Certainly, there is much in pop culture that reflects our search for the transcendent. Recently, I read an article in Huffington Post entitled "The Good Place: Evil and TV's Godless State." In it, Professor Joe Valenzano was asked his take on current TV and how divine realities are explored. I appreciated his insights and asked him if he'd care to spend some time with us, and I'm pleased to say that he assented. A little bit about Professor Valenzano. He's a professor of communications at the University of Dayton. He's also been a manuscript reviewer for numerous journals, including the Journal of Media and Religion, the Southern Journal of Communication, and the Basic Course Annual. His research also has been recognized with a top paper award from the National Communication Association. His degrees are from Providence College, University of Maine, and Georgia State University. And publications include The Speaker, The Tradition and Practice of Public Speaking, Demon Hunters and Hegemony, Portrayal of Religion on CW's Supernatural, The Peacekeeping Mission, Bringing Stability to a Chaotic Scene, Framing the War on Terror in Canadian Newspapers, Cascading Activation, and his final homily, Pope John Paul II's Death as an Affirmation of His Life's Message. So we welcome to Common Threads Professor Joe Valenzano. Hi, Joe.
Pleasure to be here, Fred. Thanks for that very generous introduction.
Certainly, certainly. So, starting right off the bat, what is it about current TV shows that you say seems to portray a Christian message, not just a religious or a spiritual message, but a specific Christian message?
Well, it's more that that they're drawing on what can predominantly be understood as Christian theology and Christian ideas to inform storytelling arcs in a variety of shows. And sometimes it's subtle, sometimes it is much more overt. The casting of God, the presence of angels, the storylines are drawn from religious texts that are part of Christian belief systems. Specifically, Revelation is one that's drawn on quite a bit. Genesis as well. They seem to like the bookends of the Bible, and they have those types of elements of Christian mythology present in much of the shows. And so it's more so now than it has been in the past. And really the turning point, I think, for this was probably around the 9/11 attacks in about the 1 or 2 years that followed. You saw a turning point in television's kind of leaning into religion in a much more direct manner in ways that they had tried and failed, actually, before pre 9/11.
And what is it about 9/11, do you think, that generated this?
Well, I think it was a very jarring social experience for a lot of folks. We had never really seen the types of things that we saw in live color that we saw that day. People jumping out of the towers, for example, are very vivid, lasting images, and that tends to have an effect on the psyche of a population in very meaningful and long-lasting terms. And I think people had to grapple with the presence of evil in ways that they really hadn't for a long time. The presence of evil in society and what it meant to be good and evil. And it was also a religious-based attack. And so I think that kind of brought those issues to the forefront for a lot of folks. And so, you know, when society's grappling with something like that, it tends to resonate through popular culture as well.
You know, I think that that makes sense. At the same time, there are so many people now who are young adults and perhaps were infants or very small children or perhaps not even born yet on 9/11. And I'm wondering how much impact that has on them now, and if what you're saying, which again makes sense, is still the main cause or one of the main causes of this rebirth of exploring religion on television. What do you think?
So a couple of things. I think that, first of all, it's been a jarring experience for me to walk into a classroom the last 2 years and recognize that the students there weren't even alive for 9/11. You know, it was a pivotal moment for me in my own life, and to see students who basically only know about it by reading it or by seeing images is kind of a check yourself moment for me about my age. I also think the way these things tend to work, it's kind of like you know, when you have kids and you want to give them, you know, they want apple juice or they want orange juice because they like the sugar, but you don't want to give them a pure glass of orange juice or apple juice because it's too much sugar. And so what you do is you take that pure glass and you dilute it with water. So the pure glass is the experience that you, I, and people who lived during 9/11 had. That's the pure experience. And what happens with the next generation, the children who are born after that, they didn't experience it, but they live the experience through their parents. And it's kind of like diluting that orange juice or apple juice with water. And so there's still elements of that are present and have efficacy and power for the generation that came after, but it's not as strong as it was for the people who lived it.
There's this common denominator that portrays people as flawed. And in the article that I referenced, it says, and since we are made in his image, God must be flawed too, right? We're flawed, God's flawed. That doesn't sound Christian.
No, it doesn't, which is kind of interesting because it's not to say that the shows are purporting or promoting Christian theology. They're using it as a launching point for stories that resonate with a population. And so they use the dominant, you know, Christian themes, and they use those to tell a story. But the story is one that leans also into the rise in the nuns. And by that, I don't mean N-U-N, I mean N-O-N-E-S. Which are people who do not adhere to a particular dominant denomination. They tend to generally believe in a generic kind of Christian faith system, but they don't adhere to a particular theology. And so those folks are also more likely to question things like God and question things like a divine plan. And so the storylines that represent God as flawed appeal to that group in particular. And a lot of young adults these days really question the not just the existence of God, but they question the divine plan, and they need to see it resonates with them if they understand that they are flawed and make mistakes. Well, you know, hey, maybe God made some mistakes in his design, and that's the explanation for why evil exists.
That's interesting because I was getting the impression that a lot of people in millennials and such, we're moving away from the concept of a personal God. And a personal God wouldn't have flaws, nor would a personal God have attributes. It's just this ground of being, if you will. But you're saying that there still is this attraction to an almost anthropomorphic deity.
Not exactly. I think that you're onto something in thinking that it's not a personal. But I guess I tend to think of it as relational. I think that most of the millennial generation and the young adults that we're seeing now who kind of lean in this fashion with their belief systems don't believe in a relationship with God. They kind of, I think, settle on the notion that there's got to be a God, because otherwise how were things created? But they don't believe that there's a personal relationship that they might have with that person and with that entity. I think you're onto something with that. And again, that kind of also helps them explain why that thing that they don't have a relationship with might also be mistaken, might also make mistakes.
And perhaps, this is, I'm just guessing right now, perhaps they like the idea of using God as a device on television. And God can be created to fit the story. And could that also be the case in, say, perhaps the biblical writers? I mean, when the author of Job wrote that story, wouldn't you expect that he had a unique take on God and decided that take on God fit the story? You see what I'm saying?
Yes. So I think that's kind of the general notion of storytelling, right? I mean, TV writers aren't setting out to send a religious message. They're sending out to use religion to tell a story that will catch on, right, that will sell. A good story needs to resonate with an audience. There needs to be something in there that we care about or that we relate to. And I think that right now people do relate to the notion of God, whether it's on a personal relationship scale or whether it's on the more global good versus evil scale. People do kind of resonate and are curious about God. I also think that, although not the intention of these types of shows like, say, Supernatural, I think that young adults especially are inquisitive about these types of issues that really don't have definitive answers, and they view these shows and their representation of stories as ways of those stories coming to life in a medium that they resonate with. The challenge is that the story's been warped from the source material, and it doesn't actually convey what's in the book. And so the audience picks up a lesson that is distorted, but they take it as truth.
I see. That makes sense. You indicate that things are a lot more complicated than in the time of the Cold War. Life seemed more binary then. You know, good was good, evil was evil. Can you analyze the ethos of that time? How was religion portrayed on television specifically? We could talk about movies as well, but right now, television. What do you remember about that time?
Well, I mean, there really wasn't a ton. If we're talking especially about television, you go straight up till 2000, and the longest running show, I'm blanking on the title, but really the average length of a show that would touch on religious dimensions in the way that we see now, two seasons maybe. There was a short series actually that NBC did, a limited series in the 90s called Revelation, that was an absolute fail. It was critically panned. It didn't get received well. And there's a lot of research that shows that TV especially, movies also to a pretty large degree, when they would touch on religion, they would touch on it in what's called a flattened way, where it was exceptionally generic. You'd see a minister, but the minister wouldn't be referred to, say, as father. They also wouldn't probably wear a collar. God is talked about in generic senses, and there's not a lot of leaning into theology or doctrine or faith documents. And so that's I think what we end up seeing, right, is before pre 9/11, but especially in the 80s, there are issues of good and evil, but they're largely done in a way that is not connected to religion. Religion was always seen, I was always told to, you don't talk about religion, you don't talk about money, and you don't talk, I forget what the third was, at the dinner table. Like, these were things that were just not addressed. And so, popular culture being a mirror of the belief systems of the people of the time picks that up and doesn't run with those kind of stories. It still tackles good versus evil. It still pits someone against someone, but it doesn't do so really in a religious sense. The closest I think we come to things like this are, guardian angel notion. You know, you see a couple of stories that ran in the 80s and 80s and 90s on TV that touched on the notion of a guardian angel, but you know, it wasn't really connected with Christianity.
Sure. One show that you were trying to think of was that Highway to Heaven?
Yes, that's the one. Okay. Yes, it ran for a number of seasons, but again, you're talking about a generic depiction.
Sure. If you're just real quick, let's just remind people that if they're just tuning in, you're listening to WGVU's Common Threads. I'm Fred Stella, and Joe Valenzano from the University of Dayton is my guest today, and we're talking about popular culture, television, and spirituality. Were you going to make one more point?
The other point I was going to say is the really one of the few places where you saw a story run for a couple of seasons that had a very specific Catholic character would be Father Dowling Mysteries.
That's right, yep. Mm-hmm.
Mm. And even that wasn't cast as a religious show. It was more of a detective story.
And he just happened to be a priest.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. No, I remember things like, you're right, the very, very generic, like the cast of Mayberry going to church. And it was the most generic Protestant church you'd ever want to imagine. And mm-hmm. and also other sitcoms and TV shows just referencing the fact that perhaps they were church going and that's it. And then maybe around Christmas, something rather blandly Christmas themed. Mm-hmm. That's about right, huh?
Yep.
Yeah, I would expect. And between, well, I think you already mentioned this. So it was the 1980s where they really started to experiment. And in the 90s, of course, we had The Simpsons. And that was rather revolutionary. Would you agree?
Yes. Simpsons, because it was a cartoon leaning into religion. And so your audience was much younger. B, you had Ned Flanders, the neighbor. And it wasn't exactly a flattering image of an evangelical Christian, the Flanders character. It wasn't insulting, but it wasn't exactly praiseworthy either.
I think that as the series has gone on, he's become more multidimensional and sometimes a sympathetic character.
Yes, I think so, and I think that that's a function too of recognition of how complex society has gotten. In terms of the ease of access to get information, the ability to see different sides of perspectives that social media in its best form can show. I think that that's a function of seeing that develop alongside of that very long-running TV show. The other character that I think in there is that worthy of note is the minister, and I forget his name.
I was thinking of him right before you started talking. Yep.
Yep. And he is definitely not a praiseworthy character.
No. But so. And it's interesting. Apu, he swings both ways. Whenever they've really focused on Apu being Hindu, they're reasonably kind to him. But then there are other episodes where he's just a guy and. Mm-hmm. He's just as flawed as anybody else in Springfield. But I do appreciate the fact that they've moved. Oh, and when Lisa was doing her spiritual search and became a Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
Those were fascinating episodes.
It's interesting, too, when you look at the way shows depict non-Christian religions. I think that's also become, especially in the last 15 years, a fascinating subject for me.
Well, then talk about it for a second.
So, I think about there was a cult show, Community, ran for five seasons on NBC, I believe. Joel McHale was kind of one of the leads in there. Chevy Chase was on there.
I loved it.
Yeah, and so actually in the recent book that my colleague Eric Engstrom and I just published, there's a chapter where we basically analyzed all five seasons of that show for religious depictions. And what's interesting is that the treatment of the religions that are covered in there, and they cover atheism, they cover evangelical Christianity, they cover Judaism, they cover Hinduism, they cover cult. The character of Chevy Chase is in a cult. And the comedic way that they tackle all of these, what's interesting is that the degree to which those are given prominence in storylines does not mirror the A, the belief systems of those groups, but B, also the presence of them in society.
Flesh that out a little bit for me.
Sure. So the character of Shirley in the evangelical Christian background, there's kind of some comedic lampooning of that background, and it's the most commonly cited, or the most commonly played with religion in there. But they also spend quite a bit of time on Chevy Chase's cultish fascination, and the way the prominence that gets in the storyline doesn't equal the degree of folks who kind of don't identify with one of the more common religions.
I see what you're saying.
It creates for audiences kind of this misperception of the degree to which people practice these outlier beliefs.
Okay, I understand. In focusing specifically on The Good Place, and the article where I found you was primarily focusing on The Good Place, mm-hmm. the view is there that you don't earn heaven or hell. Another voice in the article, Dr. Holly Wilson from Louisiana State University, says that's very Christian, but wouldn't you agree that's only a specific brand of Christianity, and many Christians would say that behavior and merit do matter?
Yes. Yes. No, I think it's a slice of Christianity. I mean, we speak of Christianity, and in some ways we're committing the same problem that television did pre-2001, which is this flattened notion that all Christians believe the same thing, and they don't. It's actually a very diverse group of people who have different systems based in the same source book. I think that you're right. I think she is too, in that that's a slice of Christianity that does believe that it's not earned, one way or the other. But it's also not what some other Christians believe.
Yeah, I will admit that I have never binged The Good Place. Actually, I don't binge TV to begin with, but I've only gotten a few episodes under my belt. But from the article and from what I've seen, the binary notions of good and bad have no bearing when it comes to whether you're condemned to the bad place or go to the good place, because neither concept is absolute. So doesn't this smack of relativism? And Christians decry relativism, I would say, across the board, do they not? I mean, they claim that there is an absolute moral authority.
They do. Then that tends to be the case with most religions, where there's this notion that there is an absolute capital T truth that you can find out about moral behavior. I think what's interesting, though, is I'm not quite sure, and I'm not as well-versed with The Good Place, to be quite honest, but I'm not exactly sure that that's where a lot of the shows these days are leaning, which is moral relativism. I think more what they're trying to indicate is that life is complicated and so are people. And unraveling that complication is kind of like trying to unravel a Gordian knot. And so they're trying to show that people aren't absolute good or absolute evil in and of themselves, that, bad people do good things and good people do bad things, and that's part of life, and we have no way how that's going to end up being judged.
I think it was quite fascinating. Were you a Sopranos fan?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And there you really got a heavy dose of the complicated lives of people who perform heinous, heinous crimes. And then you see them with their families or other people where they're kind of like you and me.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think that's a terrific show that shows, complexity. And I think it's one of the reasons why it was popular. And I think that I think it actually, you know, there's some of that, not as direct and not as much, but there's some of that also that links up with the popularity of the Game of Thrones series on HBO. The notion that people are complicated. They're not always caricatures of good and evil, and they behave differently in different circumstances with different people. And there are places where, you know, I mean, people who generally do more bad things also do some good, and some people who do good things can sometimes slip up and do something bad, and so it makes life complicated and people interesting.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, I was a voracious comic book collector, and I just remember the revolution that Stan Lee created when mm-hmm. his superheroes were flawed. They were emotionally challenged. They had bad tempers. And fortunately, the DC universe finally shifted to that as well, because mm-hmm. we were just so used to these clean-cut American way do-gooders that wouldn't think a bad thought.
mm-hmm.
I think it shows a bit of societal emotional growth that I appreciate.
No, I would agree, and I think it's interesting because I still have a large comic book collection. But I think what's fascinating too, when you when you look at the comic book characters and how they've also been adapted recently for television and for screen, you know, I've always been interested, but not to the extent that I've explored it in any detail. But I've always been interested in why Marvel has such a success on the big screen, but they have been unable to really launch anything on the small screen, while DC has actually had great success on the small screen and hasn't been able to get off the ground on the big screen.
And we will have to leave that a cosmic question to greater minds, at least for now, Joe, because we're out of time. But I want to thank you so much for spending this half hour with us, and hopefully you can be back next week and we'll continue our conversation.
Absolutely, I'd love to.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. Professor Joe Valenzano from the University of Dayton has been our guest. Please join us next week right here on WGVU-FM.